Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, November 16th, 2015. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you?
I'm swell, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. And I'm glad you're here. And Brian Chaffin, I am glad you are here. How are you doing?
I'm good. A little shaken up.
Understandable. Yeah. You know, and since you say you're shaken up, we might as well just hop into our first topic. There was the terrorist bombing in Paris at the end of the week, and people have been coping in their various ways with what happened there. And yes, it was a horrible tragedy. And it looks like this may be a catalyst for changes that could impact all of us in another way, which is on a technological level. And Brian, this is something you've been kind of looking at.
So, you know, it was much more than a bombing. It was multiple bombings, yes, and multiple shootings, multiple attacks, heavily coordinated, planned for a long time. And yet the various law enforcement agencies around the world, including ones here in the U.S., ones in Europe, ones in France specifically, U.K., everybody else, no one knew about this. And because of that, there's absolutely going to be a renewed call. And this is actually happening as Prime Minister Cameron in the UK is already ramping up attacks on end-user encryption. Those who want to have backdoors or perceived backdoors into our communications are going to want to, very understandably, and probably be very successful at using this situation to get those backdoors through legal channels.
And I understand why they would want to do that. I mean, what we're looking at here is one in a long string of just horrible, horrible massacres. This one just happens to be in Paris. And the idea that we could somehow intercept the communications between the people that are orchestrating these horrible events does sound kind of appealing. The problem I see is that I don't know if we actually really can effectively intercept these communications.
We can't.
We can't. That's right. No, okay. It's
that
impossible.
Was my lead up for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean we've dove into this topic, which is the one we should dive into. It goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. My thoughts are constantly with the family and friends of anyone who was impacted by the bombings in Paris or Beirut recently. But technology is changing our access to technology is not going to stop these things. Specifically, you know, the call that Brian's talking about will be made, bringing it into our world here to Apple to open up iMessage, right? Because iMessage is end-to-end encrypted. Your phone generates your own secure key. Your Mac generates its own secure key, right? Every device you have on iMessage has a different security key. And it is, and the only device able to decrypt is the device upon which that key was created. The private part of that key is never shared.
To be fair, the only device easily, you throw enough computing power at it and enough time, and an outside source could eventually decrypt it.
That is only a presumption that
fair
has
enough.
Not proven.
It has not been proven. That's a very good point. But that's the theory.
I guess.
It is also a digression. I probably shouldn't have mentioned
it. I mean, we could go deep into public key encryption and the way it works. But as a real gloss over, your device, each of your devices, when it joins iMessage, creates a pair of keys. One part of that pair is public, and allows someone to use it to encrypt data, but not decrypt data. The other part of that key is private and allows you to decrypt data that's been encrypted with the public part of the key. You can see where this is very, very convenient because I can create this key pair, or my phone can, without me even realizing it. It can share it with everyone. And yes, the public part of that key is stored on Apple servers and then shared with anyone that wants to iMessage me. And boom, it comes. And I have probably, you know, five keys assigned to me, three for the devices that are four for the devices that I use actively, two Macs and two iOS devices. And then probably, actually, I probably have more than five because there's probably several out there that are for devices that I don't use actively but haven't removed from iMessage or anything like that. And it's fine. It's not that, you know, there's no real security risk with that. It just means that when you send me a message, it encrypts it 10 times. Apple cannot decrypt these. And that's the point that will now be challenged again because Apple doesn't have the private keys. The private keys, as I said, never leave the device. And yeah, that means if you wipe your device and start fresh, guess what? Your device generates a new key pair. Mm-hmm. And it's fine.
And here's why Apple's doing that, because that's the important thing. Apple isn't doing it because Apple wants criminals to be able to communicate securely or terrorists to communicate securely. Apple is doing this because it wants us to be able to communicate securely to protect our data and information and communications from criminal organizations, from foreign snooping governments, from the biggest thing would be those two entities. And it cannot do that unless it happens to coincidentally also protect the bad guys from the good guys.
Yeah. And so here's the problem. And I get it, right? People don't want the bad guys to be able to communicate in this very private and secure fashion, because if they can, it means that we can't or can't easily, but in this case, couldn't intercept those communications and decrypt them into anything valuable. The problem is, in this case, there have been several articles that have come out that have said the criminals in this case have used the encrypted chat inside PlayStation 4 games to do this. So, okay, so we force Sony to open, or whatever it is, and it might not even be Sony. I don't know the details of it. It might be the specific game vendors, right, that are that are managing this. I don't know. So we force Sony and Apple. That's great. Okay, so now John Q. Public is no longer protected in his or her chats, right? All of that stuff is now accessible by anyone with the private key. And if a private, or if a master key exists, assume it will get into the wrong hands. You just have to, right? That's just the way this stuff works.
Right.
So there's a master key that's great for iMessage and great for everything. And guess what? The criminals know this. And are they going to use iMessage and PS4 chat? No. Are they? And neither will the geeks, right? So the geeks will move to things like, you know, Telegram or BitTorrent's new chat system, Bleep, right? There's zillions of these, and it's very, very trivial to create a new one. It's really, really simple. This whole public key encryption thing's been around for a long time. Very, very simple to use. Very, very simple to implement. A programmer worth half of his or her salt would be able to put together something that would be effectively, you know, unbreakable. And that's that. So changing these rules does nothing to assist us in tracking down these criminals. All it does is make sure that John Q. Public and Jane Q. Public and whatever Q. Public names you want to assign are no longer protected. That's it. The geeks and the criminals will always find a way.
It's so trivial. This is super important. It is so trivial to create platforms like this at this point that law enforcement and legislation would never ever be able to catch up to them, let alone stay in front of them. It's not possible.
It will never happen. That's right.
The one possible argument I could see being made is that it would force people to jailbreak their iPhones, for instance, and jailbroken iPhones are no.
I believe that's a very wrong assumption. I don't need a jailbroken iPhone to install an app on it, and all I need is an app that does this encrypted end-to-end chat. There's nothing that you need root access or bypassable access on the phone to do.
Well, but if Apple is going to be legally precluded, if Apple were to be legally precluded from having end-to-end encryption apps, something, you know,
iMessage being blocked, but them being blocked from allowing any app like that into the App Store.
Correct.
Now, we still wouldn't need to jailbreak it. You just do an ad hoc sideload. Yeah.
Or a sideload too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
Yep.
Yeah. So my big concern, it sounds like your big concern as well, is that the outcome of these horrible terrorist attacks is not going to be improved protection and security for us. It's going to be weakened privacy and security for our technology.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, the bad guys and the nerds, as Dave so very, very cleverly pointed out, will find new ways of doing these things. And the rest of us will be once again, have more and more of our communications and data open to hacking from criminal organizations and foreign governments.
And this, perhaps not so foreign governments.
Well, fair enough. That's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who will happily trade their security for freedom.
I know, but they would simply be trading their security for nothing.
Yeah, because in this case, they're
true.
Yes.
Right.
Right. That's the problem. Hey, there's the title for your article. Don't trade your security for nothing.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I don't want to make it sound like we are trivializing the horrible tragedies that have happened in Paris and Beirut and all over the world. But don't let those blind us to the very real and potentially bad consequences that we could have to deal with when legislation is potentially passed that starts stripping away effective encryption.
Yeah, a big part of the problem here is that in my humble opinion, sitting in my office recording this podcast, is that the intelligence world has decided that it'd just be so much better if they could sit back and collect all of the information everywhere and sift through it looking for problems, instead of having boots on the ground, instead of having, you know, human assets, instead of, you know, using all of the other law enforcement techniques and intelligence gathering techniques that were employed before so much communications went through computer networks. That's the root of the problem. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, we live in a world where technology is advancing at a breakneck pace. And we're dealing with investigation skills that are still good and valid, but maybe aren't keeping up with the technology, or at least the people conducting the investigations aren't able to keep up with the technology. So, sure, then it sounds like sitting back and letting a computer just collect all the data and process it for you. Oh, that suddenly sounds like a good idea. Where the reality is, at least right now, that's proving to not be that effective.
Well, I would imagine that a lot of things have been stopped by the massive data collections. There probably have been things that have been stopped.
There probably have been, but from an outsider perspective, sitting in my high chair, I'm not seeing the positive effects of that. Meaning, we still see bombings happening all the time. We still see these mass shootings happening. And maybe a lot have been stopped. So we're seeing what's only a small subset of these horrible things happening. But just seeing what we do see, it sure looks like there's a lot that's slipping through the cracks. All right. And I think we should talk about something a little lighter now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So how about some good news for Verizon customers? And that the good news is that the FCC has granted Verizon its waiver for Wi-Fi calling. And they needed the waiver because there's the whole TTY system for hearing impaired phone calls. And the regulations say that your phone system must support TTY, and Wi-Fi calling does not reliably support that. So you need a waiver. Verizon just got theirs, so they can enable Wi-Fi calling on their network of whenever they are ready now, which is great. T-Mobile and Sprint did it a long time ago, and they did it without getting their waiver. AT&T recently activated it on their system after getting their waiver. And I know a lot of Verizon people that are going to be very glad to be able to take advantage of Wi-Fi calling. Now, all three of us, as I recall, are AT&T users. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So we've all had access to Wi-Fi calling for a few weeks now. And I'm curious what your take on it is.
I've been using it since – actually, I've been using it on my phone since the beta – but wasn't really able to turn it on at the house here until it was released to everyone on AT&T because we have a couple of microcells at the house. And Wi-Fi calling effectively replaces the microcells, but if your phone sees a microcell signal, it will prioritize that over doing Wi-Fi calling, or at least that's how it was back when it rolled out. So I had to wait until the rest of my family could get on Wi-Fi calling in order to turn off my microcells. With that, it's been when I'm at home, Wi-Fi calling is mostly awesome. The especially if the other person is on Wi-Fi as well, the voice quality is definitely better. Right? I mean, it's not just that you get signal where you wouldn't previously, but at least on AT&T. In my anecdotal experience, it very often enables HD calling and that sort of thing. So that part of it has been fantastic. And you can really hear it. You know, you get far more high end instead of it being like, you know, this 8K bandwidth thing of you know, very compressed sound. It's a much wider sound and it sounds really good. Where it gets weird is in my house, I've got a couple of access points to get full coverage of Wi-Fi. And as I'm moving around, sometimes I'll just get into a spot where, especially as I'm getting closer to a router that I'm not connected to, if I'm connected to a different one, I'll get to a point where the signal drops for 5 seconds and comes back.
Interesting. All right. And in my setup, I have a single router, which makes sense because of the size of my space. So I don't experience issues like that. But I did experience the problem you're having where a microcell was favored over Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And it wasn't until I removed that from my network that I was able to reliably connect to Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, the microcell has sort of always – in fact, when they came out, the microcells were not being prioritized over – fringe like LTE or 4G or, you know, signals that were coming from towers. And I think at one point I called them and asked them to change that for mine, and they did. My guess or my understanding is that at a point further down the road, they did that for everyone so that if you had a microcell and you were authorized to use it, it would just prioritize that. So it makes sense, and that's fine. But where Wi-Fi calling has been weird for me is on public Wi-Fi networks, I'll see it connect sometimes. And I'm always sort of questionable about that. I don't know what the criteria it uses to say, yeah, this network's good enough for Wi-Fi calling. But these are networks upon which I have trouble getting email and sometimes even browsing the web. And to, you know, to have it use Wi-Fi calling on that makes me kind of shake my head. The other thing that I've seen is when I am tethered, there have been times when I've had my phone tethered to either my iPad, which has a, you know, a LTE, you know, SIM card in it, or to my to another phone or something, it'll join Wi-Fi calling then. I mean, I've seen it where I've been going 70 miles an hour down the highway and it says AT&T Wi-Fi. It's like, no, you know, not really.
No. That just seems sort of like an inception loop.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you're on AT&T Wi-Fi, but the other device is also on AT&T. It's like, this doesn't, that's questionable. But that actually speaks more to Apple's, when you're tethered, it doesn't care. Like none of the only use on cellular or don't use this on cellular signals, right? You can turn that on and off in apps. It just treats it as Wi-Fi because you're tethered to something and it has no idea what you're tethered to. And so there's not a separate set of criteria that it uses when you're ad hoc tethered as opposed to, you know, actually connected to a Wi-Fi circuit, even though the icon in the status bar is different.
All right. So, yeah, it makes sense. And it sounds to me like this is something Apple could address and should.
I think so. Yeah, some of that seems a little weird. But by and large, Wi-Fi calling's been good. I mean, I haven't turned it off yet. It hasn't caused me that many problems.
I can't imagine turning it off. Living in Boulder, where cell signals are few and far between.
Yeah.
But Wi-Fi is ubiquitous. It is a lifesaver.
Yeah.
My phone call quality is just so much better across the board now. So
yeah, I can
I'm
see
really
that.
Glad to have AT&T Wi-Fi calling enabled. Yep. And now that I have friends that can use this for the Verizon phones, this is going to be wonderful because that means so many of the calls that are getting dropped, which are being dropped from their end, that's not going to happen anymore, hopefully.
Yep. And is this something, we know that Verizon got their authorization. Do we know if it has simply been rolled out or is it something that's coming soon? Do we have a time frame on that?
It's coming soon. We don't have the time frame.
Okay.
I have asked Verizon for more information. I have not heard back yet.
Got it.
But as soon as I do, I'm going to pass that information right on to our readers and listeners.
Sweet.
Cool. And we're out of time. So we're going to have to wrap up.
All right.
But hey, before we totally wrap up, I want to remind our listeners that if you go to macobserver.com/Apple Store, you can link back into Apple's online store and buy all the cool products that you want to get. And when you do through that link, you are going to be supporting us. So you're going to be supporting all the podcasts that we're putting on the air for you, the articles that we're putting online for you, because we're going to get a little residual back from that purchase that you make. And that money goes to making sure that we can continue doing all of these great things for you. So next time you need to buy a new iPad or iPhone or whatever, macobserver.com/Apple Store, make it happen from there. And we are so out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here today. It always rocks having you on the show.
Thanks, man.
And Dave, thank you for being here. I love it when you're on too.
My pleasure. It was I same.
Yeah, it's just awesome. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.